You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 141, sponsored by InStock Trades and eMusic.com.
Blah, 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 blah.
Who was that?
Blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah.
Another edition of the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast. It's episode 141. My name is Ron, and I'm here with Josh.
Hi.
And Connor. Whoa, what happened?
I'm mixing it up on you. So if this happens to be your first time listening to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, let me tell you about it. We come from a little website called iFanboy.com where we like to talk about comics, and we read a whole bunch of comics, and every Wednesday, one of us reads the whole stack of comics that came out and picks our favorite or the best one and deem it the Pick of the Week. Very subjective or objective. I always get those two mixed up. I forget.
But it's subjectively objective.
It's subjectively objective. It's a very personal decision. So, and then we come here on this podcast to talk about it as well as the other comics that came out this week and a bunch of other fun stuff all related to comic books. So before we get to Josh's Pick of the Week, just want to warn everybody that we're going to be talking about the comics that are coming out this week. So we're going to be talking about, you know, we're going to be giving the dreaded spoilers. So if you don't want your comic book spoiled, press pause. Go read your comics, come back, listen. It'll be a much better experience.
Or keep them in the freezer until they're ready to be cooked.
Exactly. So that said, Josh had the pick, and let's hear it.
There was a good many books this week that were okay, but for me, the book that excited me the most was Powers number 29. And literally, I probably read it in the middle of my stack, and I got to the last page, and I was like, oh! Like I made that Christopher Lloyd sound.
Nice.
Oh! And I was like, this there's nothing's going to beat that book right now, which is it, admittedly that for me is it is a little subjective because I just finished reading the first Powers arc for the first time since it came out, basically in issues, thanks to a hardcover that my good friend Ron gave me for Christmas. So thanks for that.
You're welcome.
But I finally got through it and read that, and that was really good. It was fun to go back to it because I hadn't read it. And I've been recommending this book for so long. It was really good to go back and make sure that it actually was still good. But also because that helped me remind me, okay, that was about 8 years ago and 70 plus issues ago. And there are things in that, you know, paid off and related to this issue. And for me, I don't want that in every book. But in some books, those sort of long-term full circle things paying off, coming around, is just incredibly satisfying. And what I refer to is basically in the first book, Callista is the little girl that gets rescued by Walker, and now she's much older, which is interesting. It gives you a timeline of how long this book's been going on, and she's the new retro girl, so she's got her first sort of dangerous mission that she's on. And then at the end of that first arc also, they have Retro Girl's killer in custody, and I'm going to ruin the first arc of Powers for you, but it's not really about that. It's not about the surprise of it. You know what I mean? It's about how you get there. But they bring the guy outside, and then Trip Hammer, who's one of the superheroes, who sort of looks like George Carlin, just executes the guy in police custody and melts him. And he just said, I had to do what was right. It was the right thing to do. And then he disappears. You know, he doesn't come back. And then he shows up at the very end of this issue and basically takes the all things to hell. There's this huge fight that goes on. This arc has been going on a while. And
well, he's been through this arc. He's been out through this arc.
But he came in and ended it just the way that he did at the end of the first series, basically.
Right.
And this arc has been, if you're following the book and you really are into these characters, this arc has been very long and drawn out, and not in the negative. I mean, there definitely has been delays, but it's just like the characters who definitely love each other have been torn apart. And it's really satisfying to have them come back together and have to have a scene there. And there was all my favorite things that I know that Bendis loves, that I love. And there was the interrogation in the box scene where Dina's in the box. And so it's heightened all the more. And Walker's the guy who's got to go in there and talk to him. And there's, you know, the big argument between the captain and the detective and the internal affairs person and all that stuff coming together. And it was so much fun to read. And then they have to make the tough decision to let Dina go so that she can bring down the bad guy because they know at heart she's a good guy.
She's been working it this whole time. She's been doing her own little investigation, which was.
She'll admit, and you know that she went over the line. Did stuff that was horrible because of the disease and the junkie thing that she came down with. Going back and reading it, I love Dina Pilgrim. She's really a character I like a lot, and she has developed and changed a lot since we first met her. This, compared to the earlier Powers work, was much more subdued. It was much less like he didn't waste any time on being spunky and cute in this. It was like getting the story done. It was just some of the best of what Bendis does. And I said in several places at this point, you know, if I had to choose between Bendis's work, you know, on this book and anything else he's doing, I'd take this book. You know, this is the whole
you know, creator owned. It's the, you know, this is the baby. This is his criminal. This is his, you know what I mean? Like, this is the one that, you know, and it's really interesting knowing where Bendis has come from doing, you know, doing Jinx and doing Goldfish and Fire and all those other books is that now, you know, now that he's, you know, neck deep in Marvel world, you know, this is really his kind of last, you know, holding on to that indie comic world that he came from. Yeah.
Right. And so, I mean, basically, he doesn't have to work within the confines of the Marvel universe in this. I mean, this is a superhero book. It's a cop book, but it's a superhero book. It's not all that far afield of what mainstream books are doing. It's just that he has that little touch of freedom that, for me, is really refreshing. I really like that because anything can happen in this book and nothing is sacred, which I love. I mean, Walker's not going to get killed, but besides that.
Right. Well, he could very well get killed. Yeah, you never know.
Could.
I don't think he will.
Right, because he's kind of the hero. But
it's not named Walker. It's in Powers. He could conceivably kill Walker and start with a new cop. It's not unheard of.
He absolutely could.
Also, Walker can't get killed, right?
I don't. You know what? One of the things is that like they've made him part of the international Green Lantern-ish Corps.
Nova Corps.
Yeah, the Nova Corps. and they haven't touched on that.
Yeah, we haven't seen that in a while. Yeah.
So either he's letting it lie dormant, or he doesn't know what to do with it, which I highly doubt.
I mean, the interesting thing, I agree with you. I doubt that he doesn't know what to do with it. Is that what I find really interesting is that we're seeing it with what he's doing in Marvel with the Avengers book and Secret Invasion and all this kind of stuff. We're seeing it here with Powers, like you're seeing it with Ultimate Spider-Man. He really does have years of these books planned.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's totally amazing. And it's really impressive because it all comes together. And if you're reading the whole thing, it works.
You know, what the brave thing about that for him is it's almost a matter of self-confidence because he had to get himself to a position where he knew he would be able to finish these stories.
Right.
And he has.
Yep.
And now it's all paying off for him because the fact is if he was just some guy doing books and couldn't stay on a book longer than 8 issues, you know, he'd never get to do all this stuff. So he really got himself into a position where he could play to his strength.
Right.
And I mean, even if you look at his old works, you know, Jinx is a mighty tome. Torso is a big old book. You know, they're not small. You know, his run on Daredevil was no small thing.
Right.
And I love these kind of long.
He sticks around. He doesn't fly in for a few issues and leave. But at the same time, though, if he had never got to do the Secret Invasion story, we never would have known. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah. Exactly.
He plots in a way that it's only known to him until he reveals the plot. Otherwise, we would have just gone on blissfully unaware of all these Skrulls hanging around.
Yeah, and that's really impressive.
It's really because who knows with Civil War and all the things that come up with in their retreats and everything like that. Who would know that he would be able to get to the story that he's been laying the groundwork for? Because stuff happens, stuff changes, you know. But at least in Powers, he's got total control over it. And if anything happens, it's just him and Omen being able to do the book they want to do.
Also, I'm talking about Bendis a lot. I mean, Oming brought it in this issue.
The cover was fantastic.
Yeah, I had a whole paragraph about the cover, which is just, man, what a great, great cover. Just black and white, you know, not a lot of lines, and there's so much expression and so much relationship. And, I mean, for me, my favorite kinds of TV shows, you know, like The Wire, this story that plays out over 5 seasons or something like that. And this, to me, is that same kind of thing in comic book form. And so I love this book. Huge title. I'm reminded of it every time it comes out, and it almost doesn't bother me that it's late because it's good. And, you know, for a little while, maybe in the teens of this sort of Icon run, I wasn't loving it as much. It was always good, but it feels like it's back. And now at the end of this issue, you know, what's going to happen next? I have no idea.
Right. Well, if I could have one negative point about the book, which is what you said, was that this arc was so long and so complex that the shipping really hurt it. Because by the time I got to this issue, I had really struggled to remember what was happening. I really didn't feel the emotional punch because it had been so long. I liked the issue a lot, but it really lost a lot of resonance because this. I feel like this arc's been going on for 2 years. It hasn't, but I feel like it has, and it's just.
It's only
really
been
tough.
Four issues, I think.
I know, but it feels like it's been going on forever.
We picked the first issue of the arc back in number 25, like months and months and months ago.
Yeah, but for some, whatever reason, and you know, call me crazy, or whatever. It that hasn't bothered me. I've been able to, because I've got this bizarre, uncanny ability to remember what happens in previous issues, and like, you know, it's one of those books that we talked about before that is worth waiting for in my mind. You know, because the payoff, like, just, you know, when the moment when. When Dina and Calista are captured, and then they you just see Calista kind of wink at her, and then the fight happens. That was so great. It was such a payoff.
It was.
So, yeah.
You know, this is a book too that Connor, I absolutely understand what you're saying. And even though it's late, I love reading this in issues. I really like it's written in issues really well. Even though it's these long overarching stories. I mean, if it came out monthly, that'd be amazing. But at least they switched to this format that's a little bigger and a little meatier. Which I think also serves this book really well.
Oh, no, it's worth waiting for. It's just this particular storyline is really complex with a lot of different things happening at once. And it was hard to keep track of everything when it comes out every
month. Whatever, no, absolutely.
But it was good.
So that's all that I have to say on Powers. I don't think I can gush anymore about it. I've been doing it for a while. But
I think
it was one of your top five books from the barbecue show.
Oh, and I've loved this book. This book's been with me since I started reading comics, basically. And it's like, it's not my first indie book, but it's one of them, you know? So, you know, you never forget your first. Time having sex. That's what I was referring to. I didn't want to be subtle about that because I have had sex.
Jesus.
Captain America White Zero.
I'm not sure if Steve Rogers has ever had sex.
The triumphant return of Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale to Marvel.
Yeah, this is the prelude issue to the next mini they're doing. When is that coming out? Do we know?
Winter.
Yeah, so a while.
Yeah.
Kind of a tease, kind of a cruel tease.
A little bit of a tease.
My name is Zero.
Yeah.
Just wait until it's done and give us the whole thing.
That said, did you feel like the art was a little rushed?
No, I think his style's different now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm having a problem with? I used to love this a lot, and I still like it, but every time I look at it now, I'm like, it's not as good as Darwin Cook. There is a little of that going on in my head.
It's different.
Yeah.
No, I know. Absolutely. I'm not saying it makes sense. It's irrational. But it's not quite as good as Darwin Cook.
You can see the progression of his art style has changed throughout the years. And you can see this is very similar to how he draws the hero's artwork. This is how he draws now. It's kind of like Frank Miller.
Yeah.
You know, the way he doesn't draw like Dark Knight anymore. He draws like Sin City now. So that's just the way his style is different. I don't think it's rushed. I think it's just different.
And that's the thing. I don't necessarily think it's bad. I definitely thought there were some great panels and there's some great pages, you know, great full page splash pages and stuff like that were really, really good. But then, like, there were just some panels, like when Captain America's training Bucky, when he kind of just that weird panel where he says, "Hey, no fair," when he trips him. Bucky's upside down. I was just like, oh, that looks very quickly sketched. So I don't know. Yeah, no, this is a neat tease. I mean, it definitely had me wanting the series and getting excited for it. You know, they put this out to have it for San Diego. So it's like, you know, I mean, what are you gonna
do?
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, what I thought was really interesting was on the back cover, just the highlighting of the Daredevil yellow and Spider-Man blue and Hulk gray to remind people of like, this is what we do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like their little color thing.
I liked it. I liked it a lot. It was fun. Yeah. It was good. And I'm a sucker for these Captain America origin stories. So
it was a little different take on the sort of Captain America and Bucky that we've grown used to over the Brubaker years.
Yeah,
it's a little lighter. And so for me, I love that other version. So it took me a second to get into this one, I guess.
Yeah,
because it's a little more tongue in cheek, vintagey. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, it's retro. It's more retro. Yeah. It's a retro story.
I understand.
But more in line than what we've seen before, Brubaker, than anything else.
Yeah. But I will admit, I was like, no, Bucky's a badass killer.
Right.
That's what Bucky is now.
Yeah.
And I'm really cool with that.
Yeah.
Well, Bucky didn't start off a badass killer. This is literally his first day as Bucky. So,
yeah, that's true.
You know.
Yeah, he's got to start somewhere.
He jumps in thinking that war is like the movies, and he's learned a harsh lesson it's not. I mean, it's clear, you know, by the middle of the war, he could very well be the badass killer in this book.
I'm hoping so.
Well, I really liked the back matter stuff in this.
I did too.
Because it was some of it was like, it was really cool to see the sketches and stuff like that, but then it's like, you know, a gift for Dave Stewart.
I would very much like a gift for Dave Stewart, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then the birthday card for Jeff. You know, it's like, wow, this is really kind of personal.
Tim Sale never spends a dime on anybody. Oh, another sketch. Thanks.
Yeah. His
grandmother's like, I don't like the Hulk.
No, it was good. I'm excited for it.
I liked it more than I thought I did because, it's no secret in recent years I've been less of a fan of Jeff Loeb's work, so it was nice to see something that I could enjoy.
I don't know what it is about these books he does, but he seems to tap into whatever vein he's got that's good.
Yep.
And when he works with Tim Sale. I don't know.
Problem is, he can't do these all the time.
Yeah.
Well, he could.
I know, but it would get really old. It'd be like, the tarantula, puce.
What kind of frequency are they coming out?
The Beyond Shark
3-4. Oh wow, they came out once every year until this one.
Well, yeah, that was the last time when they were at Marvel. Now I would guess that we're gonna. I mean, I don't know if they're gonna stop here, but Wolverine.
He's only done 4 of them, and there's so many characters he could do.
Yeah.
The best one he ever did was Superman for All Seasons. I know that's not a color one, but the DC one's better.
Wow.
That's my.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally.
To each their own.
Joker's Asylum, Penguin number 1, which was the second issue of the Joker-centric miniseries that they're doing to capitalize on the Batman movie.
Hearing a lot about this book.
Jason Aaron wrote it. So
I would never have bought it had he not written this. But
I wasn't even going to buy the first one until I heard he was writing this one. So I bought the first one.
Is he exclusive to Marvel?
I think he had a lot of stuff on deck before that happened. Yeah.
It's very confusing. Very confusing. Anyway, was it good?
It was really good.
Yes.
It was... Remember last week when people asked about our dream creative teams and I said Jason Aaron should write Batman? He should write Batman.
Is Batman even in this?
He's in it for one panel.
Oh, yeah, but not really.
Yeah, but you can tell the tone of the world. He's got it down.
No, yeah, totally. You know what I really liked about this was it's a one and done, so it's like tell a Penguin story, which is no small feat at this point because a lot of Penguin stories have been told. And he did that thing that he does so well in Scalped where he makes you feel for the Penguin, but he also shows you that he's really horrible.
About halfway through the book, you're really feeling sympathetic for the Penguin. Then he does something just horrible.
Uh-huh.
Then it leads to a whole string of horrible things, and you're like, oh, he's a bastard.
And that to me is seeming to be Jason Aaron's great strength, is being able to write the two sides of a given character and make you love them and hate them, you know, like a Vic Mackey kind of thing.
Right.
Where you know he's a bastard. In real life, you would hate him to death, but for some reason, you feel for them. But also, you can see how just horrible they are.
Yeah, no, this was just excellent. I was so pleased about this one.
Mm-hmm.
The art was okay. Jason Pearson did a kind of creepy Penguin who was still kind of, looked like a human. There was one funny panel, actually. There's a scene where the Penguin goes into this black market convention, sort of, where they sell anything you want, from people to weapons to ammo.
Like Batman wouldn't know about that, by the way.
Right. But it was funny because I had just read the Exterminators Volume 4, and there's a scene in there where they go to Exterminators Convention, and both panels completely bereft of people. there's this big floor plan with booths and stuff, and there's no one around. Just like 8 to 10 people in the Penguins.
You expect to see some supervillains driving rascals around?
Or something. You think, how do they, why put it on if 10 people are going to show up to this thing?
Well, what's funny is that, it was all sort of low, not low key, but it was...
No, it was low key, I think.
It was all pretty lighthearted for the most part until he gets into the convention and then he comes upon a cage of women.
Yeah.
Who are being sold. And he buys one. I mean, so this almost feels like one of the Dini issues of Detective, but then there's, the cage full of women and it just gets a little more murderous and heavy going on in the background. And then what the Penguin does to the chef is just downright awful.
It's evil. This is very similar to the Lex Luthor story where he destroys the waitress because he can.
Mm-hmm.
The Penguin, he buys this woman because she asks for help and he remembers, when he had a little bit of a heart. And he frees her and she falls in love with him. And then there's a whole framing device about how he was laughed at in high school. And then so he thinks the chef's laughing at him at this restaurant. And he goes through this whole long, drawn-out process to completely destroy the chef's life to the point where the chef hangs himself. And then
Much later.
It's like a long – it's like a Brian Bendis plot. It goes on for years and you don't realize it's happening. And then the girlfriend finds out and then she finds this big bat book with articles he's cut out, all the people he's just destroyed over the years. And she just freaks out and it ends up going horribly for her also.
It's just another example that Jason Aaron is – he may well be quite huge. I mean,
he should be. He's definitely the best person that's come along in a couple of years.
Yeah, he's definitely – he's got it going on.
Secret Invasion 4.
What was that for?
I realize with this issue that I'm really not enjoying this in issues. I really think I would enjoy this more if I read it all at once, because it's happening so weird. It's happening so slowly and off in a billion directions, and it's just there's no forward momentum and there's no forward narrative. There's just a lot of different scenes. There's no story, and it's just like I'm not enjoying it month to month for that reason, because there's nothing to hold on to.
Yeah, I feel like we've progressed about 3 minutes in this issue.
Yeah.
And I had the last two books in my hand. I had this and I had Powers, and I was like, what do I read last? Because I want to read the better thing last. And I decided to read Powers first and then read this. And it was like, in comparison, it was such a letdown, and it's the same guy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess I'm different because, you know, just because I've enjoyed it. You know, like I, you know, sat down to read it. It is what it is. I'm reading the other books going for, you know, I am reading the other books in the Marvel Universe that are telling the story. Admittedly, it started when this issue started off. I feel as if the narrative from issue to issue is changing, the narrative device, at least in how it's telling it. And I thought it started off a little kind of weakly, not weakly as in time period, but weakly as in strength. But as it got into it, like once Nick Fury and his team got in there and the fight was happening, the thing is that I feel like it's flashes. It's not – and Connor, your observation of it, there's nothing to hold on to I think is actually true. It's just that doesn't bother me as much. But I thought the aspect of you know, what was happening with, you know, with Tony Stark and the Black Widow and Wolverine and the Savage Land was interesting. And then when we got the Jarvis on the helicarrier, you know, asking for the surrender, and then ending with the, you know, we were wondering, you know, okay, he laid out this whole thing with the Red Hood. Where is that happening? And seeing that now, okay, the Red Hood and his gang are going to get involved. And then at the end, of course, with Thor, and I assume that's Bucky at the end.
Yeah. The star on his shoulder.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the you know, it to me, it's like it's laying the groundwork to enjoy it throughout the rest of the other books, which I know is against the whole crossover mentality and all that kind of stuff, but I'm reading those other books, so it works for me. You know, like it's hitting on the areas that I would be looking for.
No.
I'm not dependent on this one book to be telling the story. Neither are we.
We were all reading Avengers. We're all reading Captain Britain. We're all reading those books.
I think it's just that when I read this, I want to enjoy it more. I was really excited about this whole thing.
Right.
And when I read this issue, I'm like, yes, I want this issue because I want things to happen that make me go, whoa. And to me, that is not, look, there's Thor on the last page, which is the oldest comic book trick in the book.
Right. It's probably it's probably a Skrull too.
It's actually he's in silhouette. Yeah, I mean, so.
No, I think it's probably him because they pair him with Bucky.
I know, I'm kidding.
They should, but you know, I guess at the end of the day, just it wasn't meaty enough. It's exactly that. It's a series of little things, and at the beginning, I was totally watching the new Nick Fury team, and I was just like, I don't know who any of these people are, and I don't care.
Right, and that's something that does annoy me is that the cover shows Nick Fury standing with the Young Avengers, and that's not true. The cover is just a lie.
I think within the flashes of scenes, there are definitely good scenes in there.
Yes.
That's why I think if I read it all together, it might be better. But as of now, there's nothing for me to progress to. What do I look forward to?
Right.
They just dropped the hood in here in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of promise, and these things are going to happen. But so far, halfway through, nothing's happened.
Yeah. Well, we're halfway through. It's issue 4 of 8, which I could have sworn this was a 6 or 7 before. Like, are they expanding it or? Has it always been 8? I don't know. But,
yes.
Okay. Right. Yeah, I just didn't notice that. But yeah, no.
The joke is they're still on the Savage Land.
Yeah.
I mean, they are.
Yeah, exactly.
They're still on the Savage
Land. Literally 3 minutes have passed on the Savage Land.
More than that.
No, all that happened was a conversation between Tony and Black Widow and then the Spider-Woman and Wolverine. Yeah. I mean, it takes place over a couple of minutes, maybe.
Yeah. Well, it was enough time for Ms. Marvel to fly from the Savage Land to New York again.
Okay, then what is everybody else doing in the Savage Land that whole time? Are they fighting nonstop, or does she just fly real fast?
I don't know. But I do gotta admit that I laughed at page 4 with the close up of the Sentry just still crying.
I do think Bendis is in on the joke with him.
Yeah, totally.
I'm definitely getting to the point where he's just like, and then make Bob just a simpering weenie. Just do that. I'm a fan of that.
Yeah.
If it was a whole book of that, I'd be totally cool. It's, you know, it's not even this bad. It's just I want to like it more than I do, and it bugs me.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it's bad. I just it's missing a lot. It's missing. It's very weird.
Right. Yeah.
And by the end, it might all make sense. But for now, it's just like I don't know what to hold on to. I don't know what to look forward to next month because there's nothing propelling the story forward.
Yeah.
So I heard a lot of people being all happy about Final Crisis Requiem, and I went to try to get a copy of it after the fact, but it was sold out.
Yeah, I was able to get one.
So was it all that?
Well, Connor, what do you think? This is more up your alley.
This issue is all about memorializing John Jones, and this easily would have been my pick of the week. This was like...
It was Peter Tomasi, strong writing, strong writing.
Peter J. Tomasi has kind of become the second best writer at DC behind Jeff Johns, and no one really knows his name, so he doesn't get a lot of sales. But I can't think of a bad book he's written between Nightwing and Green Lantern Corps, and he wrote the really good Black Adam miniseries. I don't think I've read a bad book by him in the last couple of years. This is all about the heroes remembering John. You get more of his death scene. He didn't die right away when he was stabbed by Libra. He fought a little bit and they had to cut his throat, and that was very violent and awful. And then you had funeral stuff and then a very, very touching final scene with the four heroes he entrusted his memories with, and then a fantastic final page.
I mean, talk about a classy death. I mean, like a classy way to go out. I mean, it's basically a retrospective of his entire life and his entire role in the DC universe, good and bad. Not every moment with the Martian Manhunter over all the past 40 years has been awesome. but is definitely they definitely touched upon it, and for a fan of Martian Manhunter and a fan of DC, this is the last couple pages. I mean, Connor, were you crying? I mean, I was a little choked up. I mean, it was
by the end. It was definitely like your throat got clenched up, and it was rough.
Yeah,
that's impressive.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was a good send off.
People who don't know about the Martian Manhunter are all curious why it's such a big deal that he died. Because I know people who are new were asking why. This is an issue where it totally gives you why he's important to the DCU.
Oh, he's been such a huge part of the Justice League in general. I mean, he's been the one kind of holding the flame for all these years. Throughout every incarnation, there's always been some sort of involvement by him, and it just shows at the end. I mean, that when he dies, he gives the telepathic flash to Superman, Black Canary, and Green Lantern, and Zatanna,
Batman. No, that was Gypsy, actually.
Oh, it was a Gypsy? Oh, okay. Oh, wow.
That was the only criticism I had was it wasn't explained who the girl was. It was okay. Gypsy.
But so through that they all then start writing his life. That's what it was. And then at the end you just see them with the reverence, just kind of standing there respecting it. And then even Batman at the end, like being the last one out, it had power. It definitely had power. Yeah. Oh, sad.
One of those books that makes you feel, like really, genuine emotion. It was really, really good.
Yeah. Although, where does Superman get off stealing a pyramid?
He can do it. He wants to.
It's like they go to lay John Jones to rest on Mars, and so they got all the Green Lanterns have got everybody in like these kind of little transport ships, and they've got a coffin with John Jones. But then they show Superman going to the Gobi Desert and picking up a pyramid, and he's flying the pyramid. And I guess he drops it on Mars. It's like, all right, yeah, but
it says thanks to the Spectre bringing John's ancestral home to Earth a few years ago, it's fitting that he can now rest within its walls. So he brought it back.
Okay, so that's his pyramid. Okay, I didn't know. Yeah, that. Yeah. Okay, I see that. That's good.
Doesn't the Spectre have vengeance to get to? I thought that was his thing.
Yeah. That's how important John is.
Yeah. Wow. Spirit of Vengeance is moving for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Josh, if you do see a copy of this on the shelves the next time you're in a store, you should check it out.
Yeah, I will see if they can make me cry about the Martian Manhunter, because that'd be impressive.
Yeah.
And if it ever comes out in trade form, you can go to InStockTrades.com, and you can save up to 37% off, and they have free shipping and orders above $50, with over 5,400 trade paperbacks in stock, available for order, with new releases listed every Wednesday. Orders usually ship within 48 hours. From www.instocktrades.com, and this month our iFanboy Book of the Month, Starman Omnibus Volume 1, is 47% off, and that's $26.49.
That's a great deal.
Which is a fantastic deal for that.
We're going to talk about Starman in a little bit.
But before that, we had the Jeff Johns trifecta this week with Justice Society 17, Action Comics 867, and Booster Gold 1 million. They were all really good. Why do they always do this? Why do they have the same guys' books come out the same week?
That it happens. Always happens.
Yeah, it's really weird.
I mean, I'm not complaining. I just think it's odd.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go through them quickly. So, Justice Society.
Gog is creepy.
Yeah, very really creepy.
Very creepy.
It's funny.
It's the perpetual grin.
Yeah. This book has a different tone than almost every other book I'm reading.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it makes it really interesting to me.
Yeah.
Like, it's just slightly more lighthearted, and like it's a little bit fun.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
But at the same time, there's a very underlying sense of dread in the whole thing.
Oh, sure. I do not know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I know it can't be good.
Well, no. You see at the very end, it's clearly going.
Yeah.
When he's talking to Wonder Woman, and it's like, he's like, the birds say we're loved by many. I like you too. It's just like, it's freaky.
It's like a child. Yeah.
Well, we had to get him because they made Starman not creepy. And if I don't get creepy Starman, I'll take a giant creepy Gog.
Maybe crazy Starman.
Crazy. Well, crazy.
Well, that's going to get all undone, all that stuff he did.
Yeah. I know.
I love how Starman just no, I'm thinking straight for the first time and it's not a good thing.
Well, that's what makes it all the more strong is when it goes from lighthearted, 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 and then it turns on a dime to being creepy, and you're like, oh.
It leads us to the Justice Society Annual number one, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the more we can get, really, is exactly, all I care about.
Yeah.
Action 867, this is Geoff Johns, this is retcon of Brainiac, and what the conceit here is that we've never actually met the real Brainiac before. The same way that he consolidated all the Toymans, the different versions of the Toyman throughout the years into being all robots of the real Toyman. He says here that all the times we've met Brainiac before, they've all been robot constructs of the real Brainiac, and now at the very end, Superman's going to meet the real Brainiac. He went off into space, and it's Geoff Johns cleaning up like he does. Only he can do.
I picked this up without having read the last issue in the arc, and it was totally fine to do that.
Did you read this one?
Yeah, I did. It was pretty fun.
Yeah.
It feels like all Superman stories have a scene where, like, his father makes him feel good, and then he makes his father feel good, and then he goes off to do some hard thing. Every good Superman story I've read always does that same thing. I'm not saying I mind it, but I'm not sure if you can do a good Superman without doing that.
Yeah. Pa Kent, man.
I know.
Booster Gold number 1,000.
1 million.
1 million. I'm sorry, 1 million. Playing off of the early 2000s crossover gimmick that they did with the 1 millionth issues.
Which that crossover was not good.
No, it was not.
No.
It wasn't that. It was a Grant Morrison one, wasn't it? He pretty much got away on that. Yeah. This was, I believe, Geoff Johns and Jeff Katz's last issue, right?
It is.
Way to go out.
Yep.
Way to go out strong. Wow. It was really, really good. It was just really, really good. And then it ends with we find out that Rip Hunter, I guess, is Booster Gold's son.
Yes. Well, that's the thing. We've never known who Rip Hunter really is. It's always throughout the whole years. It's always been his identity secret because he's the Time Master. And if anybody finds out who he is, they'll kill him in his crib, and then they can wreak havoc in time. So here he admits to himself when he's alone in his room that he calls Booster Dad.
Yeah.
And find out that the Booster Gold family, the Carters, are the timekeepers.
Yeah. Which I love the last page, which is a great kind of painted kind of, like version of Booster Gold and his sister in Paris in 1889, and the little the paragraph explaining about it and how they're the Time Masters and how the black sheep of Booster Gold. I just thought that was a great little kind of capper, and then we get the little epilogue and the coming this year in Booster Gold. So I mean, I was curious if I was going to stick with it. I might stick with it, see how it is, see how Dan Jurgens does. The scene with Batman was powerful again.
Yeah,
again, another Batman connection, powerful,
Well, the next arc is Dixon.
Yeah. Oh, it's Dixon? I thought it was Jurgens.
It's not going right into Jurgens yet. No. Dixon's doing the next arc.
They must have had those turned in.
Yeah. Yes. So. But that was a great scene with Batman. Yeah, John's books were all good this week.
Yeah, basically, the thing with Batman was that when Booster went to try to save Barbara Gordon and kept on getting attacked and couldn't do it, and every time the Joker beat him, for whatever reason, those pictures stayed in the timeline, like the photographs that the Joker was taking. So Batman had them, and he's been holding on to them and waiting for the right moment to talk to Booster about it, and he finally did. And it was a great, great way to tie it in together.
If Geoff Johns was a pro athlete, I would test him for juicing. I mean, like, literally, it's getting ridiculous at this point.
So back at the New York Comic Con, on the video show, when I interviewed Andy Lanning about Nova and Guardians of the Galaxy and stuff like that, I had asked the fanboy question of, are we going to see some of the original Guardians of the Galaxy? And he kind of said, oh, yeah, no, I'm sure they'll make their way in there somehow, whatever. And as an old Guardians of the Galaxy fan, this is just like, it's candy. So, right on the cover, there's a new incarnation of Starhawk flying right at us. We've got Vance Astro. It's combining what he's doing currently with the reverence for the past, and so much fun. So much fun.
Well, to take the other side of that, I have no idea what you're talking about, and I really liked it.
Yep.
So that's kind of cool. It's really neat that you can do both of those things at once. If nothing else, I just think that this is one of those books that, for me, I love its imagination. It's the only book that I can think of right now that's doing, like, it feels like Grant Morrison type of stuff, where, like, he's got the villains or whatever who say, I believe this, and when they say, I believe whatever it is, that actually happens.
Yep.
And it's just such a neat, imaginative bit of thing that's a little bit out there, but it's still grounded enough that it's fun.
Yep.
Another great issue.
Yep.
I wanted to bring up Ultimate Origins number 2, just because, why shit on Bendis completely? I thought this was a lot better than the first one. a lot more fun sort of going along.
Yeah, I was curious why you wanted to put on it. I mean, I thought it was all right. I didn't think it was notable though. You know. It was just another Captain America origin story.
I don't know. For some reason, I really like those.
Well, Butch Geist's art was great. I mean, don't get me wrong.
It was. And it was just – it's just one of those things like – I don't know. It was fun. I think I probably had more fun reading this in story-wise than I did Captain America White, which is interesting that they sort of came out in the same week.
Oh, yeah.
Slightly different.
A lot more meat to this one.
Yeah, there was. And I also really it's really interesting. That last page sort of struck me again because I remembered that they had a different Captain America outfit back then.
Yep.
And that design to me is so much more appropriate than the traditional one that we've seen. And I had a lot of fun reading that book. And I thought since we'd sort of not enjoyed the last one that much, I definitely, this was a fun read for me.
I did not enjoy the last one. I just thought it was standard.
Yeah.
I think this is still kind of standard.
Yeah, that was my feeling as well. Yeah.
I can see that, but I enjoyed it.
Three Bendis books, three Johns. I do like fun.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, you're right. Three Bendis books, three Johns books. Wow.
It's a good thing we give those big time names all their time there.
Yeah.
don't tell B. Claymore.
So those are the comics that we thought that were interesting enough. But if you go to ifanboy.com/comics, you can see what everybody else, all the other users of iFanboy have picked and pulled. And a lot of folks have written reviews, and we wanted to highlight a couple.
Horrible Cabbage writes Captain Britain and MI-13. He gives it a 5 for story, 5 out of 5, and a 5 out of 5 for art. And he says, I'm not a Marvel guy. I barely know that a Skrull is an alien and not, as I might have guessed, a horrible infectious STD. Oh no, I've got Skrulls in my downstairs place. I'd also, before this series, never heard of Captain Britain, but none of that matters because, by golly, this book is awesome. The characters are interesting, the dialogue is sharp, and it all seems to sit just far enough towards the edge of the rest of the goings-on in the Merry Marvel Madhouse that I don't feel like I need to know anything other than what's on the page.
Yes.
Yes.
The book is very heavily into like sort of Britannia lore, so that probably helps. But it was good.
Well, I mean, it's good. It's good comic booking in that it exists in the landscape of the universe, but you can read it by yourself and enjoy it, and not have to know everything else that's going on. So, I mean, it's good in that way.
Were you happy, Ron, that Brian Braddock is back?
Yes, I was very pleased. I knew he wasn't going to be gone.
I think Paul kind of let that one slip.
Yeah.
But wait a minute. No, he is dead. Anyway.
So, I like the suit. I like the new suit.
Yeah. I like the variations. I mean, there's so much stuff you can do with the British flag and stuff like that. It's just, I mean, I don't know. I just love the character. I'm just glad to see that he's not going by the wayside. So I knew he wasn't going to, though. I don't know, I had a feeling.
Only one more issue, and then it goes off on its own. Yeah. Only one more Secret Invasion time.
Yeah, then we'll see where he takes it. Secret Invasion time. Yay. All right, our next review comes from Brian Baer, who wrote a review of Indiana Jones and the Tomb of the Gods, number 1, which he gave us the story a 3 out of 5, and the art a 3 out of 5. And he says, this book didn't start off with quite the strength I was hoping for. The writing is fairly solid, capturing the characters' interactions and Indy's one-liners accurately. The pacing does not appear to be following the flow of the films as much as I was anticipating, however. Whether this is a bad thing or not is impossible to tell from this issue alone. I'd love to read a great Indiana Jones comic story once in my lifetime, and I'm still hoping this one will be it in the end. Interesting. I didn't read this one. I saw it on the racks, though, and I thought it was more Crystal Skull, and I noticed that was a different story.
Yeah, just, you know, I figure people want to – it's one of those books that we don't talk about. And so, you know, people were excited about it. There's enough people – like, I didn't love the movie, but this Connor did. There's certainly a lot of people who did.
Yeah. Well, no, I like the fact that there's a world where with Indiana Jones comics and, like, licensed property comics. As a kid, I always enjoyed those, you know. I'm glad Dark Horse is still doing that.
So, you know, if we're not reading them, people are.
Yeah, exactly.
So make sure you check out the comics section on ifanboy.com so that if we don't talk about something or whatever, there's lots of other valuable opinions there.
Yep, absolutely. So it's early July, and we figure it's time to talk about our book of the month. I had the pleasure of – or the responsibility of choosing the book of the month this month. And really, it wasn't very hard once I started getting through the first couple of pages of the Starman Omnibus Volume 1 to pick that as the book of the month. If for those of you who may not know about it, Starman was a series that was first published in 1994, written by James Robinson with art by Tony Harris, with a couple of different fill-in artists here and there, but the majority of the art was Tony Harris. It was a story building off of that Golden Age connection that James Robinson seems to have, of telling the modern-day Starman, who is the son of the Golden Age Starman. What, you know, and it's funny because I wrote my review on ifanboy.com. If you go look at the top, you see the book of the month. I was 17 when this came out, and I was reading comics, and I was pretty much drowning in Image and X-Men books. And this was the book that if I was 17 and reading, I probably would have been cooler than everybody there because I knew what quality was, but I was dumb and stupid at 17. I wasn't reading it. I remember seeing it on the racks. I remember seeing the painted covers and the logo was, you know, was very noticeable, but for whatever reason I wasn't really into DC, and for whatever reason I never really picked up onto it. And boy, do I wish I had. Josh, you had read these all the trade paperbacks of these a couple of years ago, right?
A long time ago, I bought like the first five of them.
Yeah.
And then just for whatever reason, mostly because there were no numbers on them.
Right.
And the inside, they weren't reprinted in exactly the order they were printed. So I could never – whenever I was out and I was like, maybe I'll get a trade, I could never remember which one I wanted to get next.
Right.
And then so last year I bought the final five just before they announced they were doing Omnibuy of everything. I've read the whole thing.
Yeah. So and after you read it, I remember you raving about it, just totally. Like, so
– You know what's interesting is that I liked the first half of it that I'd read quite a bit. I think that – he meanders a little bit. Have you ever read like Michael Chabon, where sometimes there's a little too many words than there need to be?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think James Robinson does that in the beginning of Starman a lot. It's very, very dense. There's a lot of stuff there. It's clearly very good, but it's almost like he's trying a little too hard.
Well, no, but what I think is interesting is that similar to what we were talking about with Bendis earlier, is that and from what I can tell from talking to you and talking to other folks who have read the whole run, is that there's a master plan for the entire run, and there's a lot of setup that occurs in this first volume, and a lot of like things that are seeds that are planted, that some that are planted early in volume one that pay off within the pages of volume one, but that other seeds that will pay off later in the series.
Basically what I'm getting to is that I liked the first part of it. I liked it a lot. It was better than a lot of comics I read, and it excited me. But by the time that I got to volumes 9 and 10 specifically of the trades, I was like in oh my god status. Like, I can't believe how good this is and how excited. I mean, like, ripping through the pages at the end because I want to know what's going to happen. And it's all because of the slow, slow character development. I mean, say slow in a good way, that you undergo when you're following Jack through everything that happens.
Yeah.
And his acceptance of his situation, and his appreciation of that which came before him, and even the character development of his father. And I mean, there's just so much good stuff that happens in there, and it's good at first, but it just keeps getting better. The momentum of it is really good.
Yeah. So to focus on volume one, basically DC has been they've been out of print. The trades have been hard to find. I'm surprised you were able to find them, Josh. I know a lot of people have been frustrated trying to find them.
So I had the first few before they went out of print.
So they're collecting these in this hardcover. It's not oversized. It might be a little bigger than standard comic print, but it's a beautiful printing, beautiful hardcover, great new cover by Tony Harris. It's collecting the first 17 issues, which start with issue number 0, because Starman launched during the Zero Hour event at DC and might have the acclaim of having the only good issue number 0 from that entire batch. Basically, it tells a story of one of the Golden Age Starman's foes launches an attack on Starman later in their lives and starts off by taking out his son, who is the current Starman, David?
David.
So the issue number 0 starts with David being killed. And then we get introduced to Opal City, which is the city of Starman, which Robinson invented for this series. It wasn't a pre-existing city in the DC kind of geography. It, again, you know, James Robinson and that reverence for the Golden Age and that reverence for, like, what makes DC special really builds up Opal City as a character in and of itself. You know, it's a very kind of Art Deco, kind of modern. You get a lot of history aspect of it.
You really feel like it's a real place. He really builds up the city, and that through the whole thing. Yeah. And that's everybody's relation to each other is through Opal City, much in the same way that in Batman, you know, Gotham City is imperative to that character.
And what's interesting is that so you got the Golden Age Starman who's in retirement, his son David is taking the mantle, now he's dead, this villain the Mist is attacking, and so Jack Knight, the Golden Age Starman's other son, who is a little bit of a, you know, I wouldn't say slacker, but you know, not a not really, he's kind of a little bit of the rebel, you know,
a selfish dick.
Yeah, well, he's got the stylish haircut, and he is a shop owner of a junk and collectibles and antique store. He doesn't get along with his father or his brother, that sort of thing. He realizes that this attack is tearing at both his father and his father's legacy as well as his city. And so he does, you know, very reluctantly, he picks up the cosmic rod and fights back. And then in doing so, he becomes the new Starman. And what's really interesting about that is that we talked about this a lot, is how the, you know, this is really the tale of an everyman becoming a hero and the reluctant hero at that. And we've read that story over and over a lot, but Robinson, this is probably the example of the best execution of it. You know, Jack Knight doesn't want to be a superhero. He doesn't want to wear the costume. He wears, you know, a t-shirt and a duster jacket and goggles. It's very non-traditional in what it does, but it's, you know, built from this basis of doing the right thing and being a hero and stepping up that, you know, so many people can relate to. And what's really interesting is that in this first volume, what I thought was really funny is that while, you know, so Jack Knight becomes Starman, you think it would change his life and he'd focus on, you know, his cosmic rod and patrolling, all this kind of stuff. No, he keeps his job. He's got to go get junk. He's got to go get, you know, and there's a great issue where he's talking to his dad and he's explaining that if he goes cross town and he can buy this collection of something and he could trade it to another guy cross town and make a lot of money on it, and then a fight happens and he misses that opportunity, and like there are ramifications to his superheroing, to his career, which I thought was great, which was just like this kind of realism aspect to being a hero in the city.
Well, it's also to me, it's a little bit of him, it's denial.
Yeah.
It's like he could just be the superhero.
Yeah.
But he's like, no, I don't want to lose myself.
Yeah.
And so he keeps that other thing, but that part of himself keeps getting, you know, hassled and wrecked and messed up.
Yeah.
You know, like the superhero thing just takes over.
Yeah.
It becomes his whole life.
Right.
And he's pushing back on that for a lot of this book.
First volume, it's a great, I mean, like if you're curious about hearing Starman, you've heard people talk about it. James Robinson, you know, is writing Superman now. He's doing that Justice League series coming up. And if you're a fan of Ex Machina and fan of Tony Harris's work, it's interesting to see how these creators have evolved from this point 15 years ago. And it's probably one of the, you know, the better series of the 90s. I think the whole run was about like 60 or 80 issues or something like that.
80
issues. 80. Yeah. So they're going to be collected in these hardcover editions. This is a great jumping on point. And I mean, honestly, it blew me away at how good it was.
I'm really glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Hey. But, I mean, the one thing to keep in mind about this series is that it's not like wall to wall action.
No.
There's a lot of reading to be done.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's at times it does, especially near the beginning bits, it does feel a lot like prose. So, you know, keep that in mind. If that doesn't sound like your kind of thing, this may not be the best thing. But is, you know, for my money, I can guarantee you the whole thing pays off.
Yep. Totally. And like we mentioned earlier, if you go to InStockTrades.com, you can find the Starman Omnibus for a super discount, 47% off. You can get it for $26.49 at InStockTrades.com. Definitely, you know, can't recommend it more. Pick it up. You know, tell everybody, go to iFanboy.com, tell everybody what you think.
So. That's a stupid good deal.
Yeah, stupid, stupid good deal. And speaking of stupid good deals, if you head over to emusic.com/iFanboy, if you like the music, I know every episode we change our opening and closing to a different song that we like. We're big fans of music here at iFanboy. You can go to emusic.com. You can get 50 free downloads, totally no DRM. You can put them on any music player. If you have an iPod, a Zune, an Arcos, anything that you might have, the music will work. Quality's awesome. Emusic is like really... They're a really cool company. They've been around since, you know, I think the late 90s. And with iTunes and all these other kind of, you know, 800-pound gorillas coming in, emusic.com has really kind of been able to stay on top and like give us what we want with no DRM music. Go to emusic.com/iFanboy. There's a playlist there of songs that we picked out that we think that you guys might dig. You could try downloading those, or you can download any 50 songs you like for free just for signing up. So emusic.com/iFanboy. All right, on to the email.
I will read the email.
All right.
Jason Newcomb, who's Jumping Jupiter on the site, says, here's a question for you three to ponder. I've been hearing a lot of this in relation to RIP, as in Batman. When Grant Morrison writes something, you can't really judge it until the end. Why is there a separate standard for one particular writer? This is my opinion. There are lots of writers who write books that read great on monthly basis and in trade format. I see no reason why Grant should get a special privilege. RIP coming out as a monthly, thus it is coming out as a monthly, thus it should be judged according to how it reads as a monthly.
Wrong.
I don't know if it's wrong.
He's wrong.
No, Connor, wait. He has an opinion. He can have a point. I think that there's something to be said for it's a like we're talking about Secret Invasion. Judge Secret Invasion after issue 8 comes out and you've read the whole story. You know, I think that's fair to say. I don't think it's Grant Morrison gets a pass or anything like that. It's the idea of.
No, I'm saying he's wrong that only Grant Morrison gets his pass. This is a lot of people write as a whole. People write differently, therefore every writer's judged differently.
But I think it's fair to judge on if you want to judge on an issue basis that like you know with a lot of problem that people had with Final Crisis is that and like what you had with Secret Invasion, you judge Secret Invasion on an issue basis.
Right. Well, I'm saying I'd rather read it and judge it by the end, because otherwise now I'm not enjoying it in issues. That's different, though.
Well, it works differently for everybody, because the fact is it depends on what your patience is. The reason that I think with myself and Connor, for example, that Grant Morrison would get a pass. I mean, Connor's not annoyed by how Grant Morrison's writing, so it doesn't really count. But for me, I will give him more leeway.
Yeah.
Because to me, my past experience has taught me that being patient is rewarded with him. Now, that not everybody gets that. You know, the new guy on a Batman series that I'm not enjoying doesn't get that. You need to impress me more quickly. Grant Morrison has earned my respect, I guess, in that case. You know, so is Bendis. So I let them have more. That's why they get a special privilege. But that's just for me. For you, if you're not enjoying something, don't buy it or wait until it comes out later. I mean, it really is what works for anybody individually. We can only recommend you what we've seen in the past. That
I think, yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for the established writer, veteran with a reputation, where very rarely at this point you know what to expect from a Grant Morrison or a Brian Bendis or a Greg Rucka or Ed Brubaker or whatever. Like, they've done the work to deserve the benefit of the doubt to read the whole story. That said, at the end of the day, the whole story could suck, you know, and they could
Grant Morrison.
Well, you judge it at the end. It might suck. It might be good, but you know.
Listen, it's absolutely possible. I put this at about a 25% possible that a Grant Morrison story like this that you're waiting to come together may not at the end.
Yeah.
This is the risk you take. He does sometimes just go somewhere that you didn't really want it to, or, you know, but...
Because the Catman do.
Yeah. So. Aliens, man. Look at the man.
I think it's less about the writer and more just about the whole story. I mean, I'd say that for anybody. So if you have a question, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. Let us know what you think about judging writers and that sort of thing. Okay, so on to our voicemail.
Hey, it's Jeff from Texas. I'm a little bit drunk, but I wanted to talk to you guys and tell you that I'm excited that you have turned me on to this band called The 101 that does your little theme song for the video cast, because they're awesome. And also, have you guys started reading Hercules yet? Because it is awesome as well. And I will talk to you later. Bye-bye.
I love that people get drunk and call our line. This is not that rare of an occurrence.
I was just going to say, it's not that rare at all, actually.
No, and I love it, but it's, you know what? It's cool to point out that the 101 is the band who does the music that they let us use for our video show.
And unfortunately, they broke up a little while ago, but the main guy from the 101 is in a new band that's called Golden City, and you can find them at myspace.com/TheRealGoldenCity. And if you'd like the 101, you'll dig the Golden City. So they're a very good band. Can't recommend them more.
The good news is that we've held up our end of the bargain with that song. We're able to use it because we're still not advocating Nazism.
Yes, exactly. That was the one deal term that they had.
Yeah.
And Hercules, everybody, you know, I keep hearing people are still talking about Hercules. I haven't read it yet, but I'm going to try.
I'm not going to?
Yeah.
Sorry.
I think I might read the first trade. I thought about buying an issue, but I didn't because I had a lot of books to buy.
Well, there.
All right, so if you want to call the voicemail line to tell us how drunk you are, you can call us at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697. And please do not drink and drive and call the voicemail line.
And don't act like you're drunk.
Yeah.
Don't call in and do fake drunk, because we'll know.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll know. So. Come on, man. There were several people who called in and said that they also cried from reading Final Crisis Requiem. So chin up, boys. It's going to be all right.
Bunch of pansies.
Yeah.
It's sad. I'm going to go watch New Frontier again.
Guess what's coming?
I don't know. What's coming, Josh?
Oh, San Diego's coming, bitches.
Oh! I'm not ready.
This is the crescendo of the comic convention season, and not too many weeks from now, we will be haunting the streets of the Gas Lamp District, probably panhandling money.
Because we need it.
Very likely. Like last year, we made jokes about strippers and all. No, just give me a nickel. Seriously, please. I need to eat.
We're going to be there. We're going to be there for the entire con. If you're going to the convention, we hope we'll get to see you. We're going to be appearing at there's going to be a comics podcasting panel on Thursday at 5:00 with some of the other podcaster all-stars. So that's always a fun thing to go to. And then there's also going to be – we're going to be throwing a bit of a meetup party with our friends over at the Totally Rad Show, another show on Revision 3. We're still waiting on firming up the details on that meetup, so stay tuned to ifanboy.com for more details about it. But it's probably going to be Friday or Saturday night.
And get on the iFanboy Twitter feed, because that's – if there's any last-minute stuff about where we're going to go or what we're going to do, that's a good place. And you can get text messages sent to you so you'll know where we're going to be.
Yep, exactly.
So that's Twitter.com/ifanboy.
Yep. And we look forward to seeing you all in San Diego.
Yes.
Yes. And so you might have, if you're a big fan of the comic book shows, you might have noticed that Hellboy came out this weekend. We're going to be, we talked about it, gave our little podcast review, and if you look at it on the feed and look at the show directly under this one, you can download that and hear what we thought of Hellboy. And if you haven't seen Hellboy, be sure to go check it out and click on one of the Fandango banners on iFanboy.com to buy your movie tickets, and that helps us out. Thank you.
Or for Dark Knight coming out.
Yes, Dark Knight coming out. Yeah, I got my tickets.
Or any movie tickets. Just yes. Click through it and buy your tickets.
Yeah.
Damn, yep. That's what I did.
And that Fandango banner is at ifanboy.com. You can go there to read Josh's Pick of the Week review on Powers, and you can see all the in-depth comic book discussion we've got in the daily columnists. And we got some more people coming this week. We've got a couple of new features coming. Yep. So go to ifanboy.com and check that out. And it's fun. It's
good. Jim is bringing it on Monday, by the way. Not that other people haven't, because I thought that Paul brought it last week with his Hellboy stuff, and Mike Romo really brought it on Thursday with his stuff, and basically I'm going to quit writing. that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'll need to sell things to do that. So go to ifanboy.com/store and you can see all the stuff about Hellboy from this week that we linked on there, and a way to get into Amazon if you're going to buy stuff there. Good way to help the show out and yes. See some recommendations.
And speaking of Hellboy, if you watch our video show, you saw this past Wednesday our second Hellboy or Hellboy Again came out. Where we talked about the movie as well as the current comics that have been coming out in the Hellboy universe. So you want to go to revision3.com/ifanboy to check that out. And then coming this week, we're going to be looking at the top 5 Batman stories to go in tune with the Dark Knight.
That aren't.
Yeah, that aren't the Dark Knight. So
don't reveal the secrets of the show.
But in case you didn't notice, the video show has moved from Saturdays to Wednesdays. So now every Wednesday you can get your fix of iFanboy right when the comics come out. You can watch some TV about comics and enjoy that.
And along with that, you can check out the iFanboy Mini, which is every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday. It's a little 1 to 4 minute piece on comic books that we enjoy doing, and it's fun. And so check that out.
You guys brought it too.
Yes, saying. We did.
I thought I did too. Everyone brought it. Okay. Basically, it's a big potluck of it. And you should wear your shirt so that we know who you are. Go to jinx.com/ifanboy if you want to get an iFanboy t-shirt. And then you can send pictures in to jinx.com. And they'll send you free stickers and then send us pictures too, because it strokes our delicate little egos.
Yes. And if you want to stroke our ego even more, you can send us an email at contact@ifanboy.com to tell us how much you love us, or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS 226-2697. No, seriously, please write and call in with any of your questions, comments, or thoughts or anything like that. You might get on the show, audio or video. So be sure to keep them brief, 30 seconds, and tell us who you are and where you're from.
And check out our social networks at ifanboy.com/about, MySpace, ComicSpace, Verb, Facebook group. And as we said earlier, go join the Twitter feed. That's where we're going to update you from San Diego. So check that out. Go join twitter.com/ifanboy.
Hey, if you like the show, a good way to support us is to get over to iTunes and leave a review for the audio show or the video show. Better yet, tell people about it who you think might like it. That word of mouth is the best thing. If you're on message boards or wherever and people are talking about it, say, I like this show. If you do, if you don't, then don't lie. That's fine.
And finally, if you like the show, if you do like the show and you've told somebody and you also want to help out, you can go to ifanboy.com/donations, where you can donate any denomination you like and help us keep this going, because we work very hard on it and it's all free for you. We appreciate your support. All right, well, that was another week of comics.
Like the mail or the weather.
It was a good week.
It was a solid week. I had a big stack, and it was fun. I had a good time reading it. I enjoy the comic books. I like the comic books. I will continue to like the comic books.
I felt very confident about my pick of the week.
Good.
Good.
Because it was my favorite book that I read this week.
Good. That's not defensive at all. All right. So until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm not defensive. Why would you say that? I'm not. That's, you can't say I'm not defensive ever. It's non-starter.
Come out of the cupboard.
Oh my God, Captain Britain and MI-13 is the best series that Marvel is putting out right now. Oh my God.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I am not a therapist. I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.